We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's Sports Talk Saturday.
I'm just ready to get it on and crush this guy's skull.
Can't say enough about him. What is he? He's a winner. That's what he is. He's a flat-out winner.
I thought the curse of the Bambino doesn't start till September.
It's on like a mother.
The WGR Sports Radio 550.
All right, welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. One more hour spent with you here on this Easter weekend. Hopefully you're having a good, fun, safe Easter weekend with family, friends, and if you're traveling out there, be safe on the roads. Lots of people out there. We have a Bandits game going on tonight. I'll be headed out there if you're going downtown. That'll be pretty cool as well. A lot going on here at Buffalo Sports today, 3840 McKinley Parkway. Come on out. Sal Capaccio here live today. They have free skate sharpening all day, and you can get one of your golf clubs re-gripped and installed for free as well. Going to head right out to the West Hur Hotline where R.J. White is standing by. He is a senior editor at CBSSports.com. He also is some guy who really does a good job in the mock draft every year, or at least we all hope we do a good job, and he has his up latest one at CBSSports.com. So we'll see exactly what he has the Bills taking and talk a little bit about that. R.J., thanks for joining me today here on WGR.
No problem. How you doing?
Good, good. Thank you. All right, so let's start off. Let's dive right into it. Let's talk about the Buffalo Bills at pick number 9. When you do your mock, when you kind of take a look at the overall picture, you know, what are you thinking about the Bills at 9 and where they may be leading from what you're hearing right now?
So I think that the top two options for them are going to be tackle Juwan Taylor from Florida and defensive tackle Ed Oliver from Houston. Now, I'm not sure either one is going to be there. It's going to obviously depend on what happens ahead of them. Right now in my mock, I have Taylor slotted number 7 to Jacksonville. Ed Oliver going in number 8 in a trade up. Atlanta trades ahead of the Bills to get him. And then I think if those two things happen, I think the Bills are probably looking edge rusher at that point. Montez Sweat is an option. I know there's issues with his medicals. You know, they think he has a heart condition that might come into play down the line that might push him down the board. So 9 might be a little early for him. And I think news just broke right before I came on that he canceled his appearance at the draft. He was supposed to be in the green room. He decided he's going to stay home, watch it with family. So you wonder if that's the kind of thing that could lead to a slide. He might be getting some intel that he might not go as high as he thought. He might want to be home. So even if he's not an option for them, I still think you could go over Sean Gary as a defensive end. Brian Burns would be a great player off the edge. So I think there's definitely going to be a possibility of them being able to get somebody to pressure the quarterback on the defensive line there. Or even if Taylor's gone, you can add a guy like Jonah Williams, maybe Cody Ford, Andre Dillard to help the offensive line too. So there's definitely going to be options for the Bills at 9.
All right, let's run through a few of these names because the one name that's been most mocked to the Bills I've seen is Ed Oliver. But I do also feel you on maybe he could go a little bit earlier. There seems to be a little bit more buzz lately after he made his visits. There's even word the Jets could be considering him at 3. But is Ed Oliver at number 9? Would that be a really good value for the Bills? And, you know, if he starts to slip to 6, 7, 8, should they even maybe think about jumping up a little bit to take him?
Yeah, I would consider a small trade up. Well, I know that a lot of teams have met with him, and a lot of people seem to like him. There was a lot of concern that he would not be a fit for every scheme. He's a little bit smaller. I think he's a guy you want to have as being a one-gap penetrator. They play 3 technique, which would be perfect for the Bills, to get there at defensive tackle. But if you're talking about these 3-4 teams like the Jets, the Bucks, I don't know how he really fits in on those teams. So I do think if you're looking 6, 7, maybe you start thinking about a little trade up. I would even consider if it gets to 8, knowing that Detroit's looking to trade down, maybe even giving them like a 4th-round pick to get up. So, I think those are options for them.
All right, so the name that you mentioned also that we haven't talked a lot about here in Buffalo is Brian Burns. Tell us a little bit about Brian Burns, because I agree that he's a guy that isn't getting enough love and maybe consideration, but he is an option at that spot.
Yes, a lot of people coming out thought he was only going to be a fit for 3-4 teams off the edge because he's a little bit smaller. I think he played in the 220s. as far as his weight went. But when he showed up at the combine, he weighed in at 249, which is fine. You know, if you're going to be on the line, put your hand in the dirt. So I do think he would be an option there. And when you add on that much weight before the combine, the worry is you're not going to work out as well. You know, you did all that work to put on weight and show teams your scheme versatile, that maybe you cancel your workouts. Maybe you don't showcase that. He ran the 40, he blazed in the 40. You know, he was super impressive. Look, was the athlete that we thought him to be, looked great running all the drills. So it was really impressive for him to come in, put that weight on, and then show that he could play at that weight, you know, running through those drills at the combine. So I think that really does put him in play for a top half of the first round pick. I don't think there was a lot of talk about him being in that top 15 range before the combine, but now it seems like a pretty much lock. I think the lowest he could possibly go is 16 to Carolina, but I do think he's a top 10 option at this point, especially if the buzz is that Sweat is going to fall a little bit. Then you got to think that some kind of edge rusher is going to move up and fill in that gap.
So count me among the people who really is not on the Rashawn Gary hype, because I just don't see the production, and that scares me. Now, I get it. I know what's being said, RJ. It was more about the scheme. You know, he impacted the game in a lot more ways than necessarily having stats, but I am scared off by the lack of production. I see the physical ability there. Should I not be as scared off by the production? Where do you fall on that?
Well, the thing you got to like with Buffalo staff, you know, they've shown they can get production out of defensive line. You know, that's kind of been the trait of Sean McDermott, is that, you know, that front seven defenders, he can get it locked down. So if you give him a guy with traits, he's going to get the production out of him. So I wouldn't be that worried if Gary is the pick at nine, because I really do think McDermott is the kind of guy that's going to be able to unlock his potential, and you're going to get, you know, better stats than you did at the collegiate level. But, you know, if he lands in the wrong spot or in the wrong system, maybe you don't like him as much. You know, I don't think he's a definite going to hit a high floor kind of guy, but in the right place with the right coaching staff, I think he works, and I would consider McDermott one of those staffs that can make it work.
All right, let's talk about quarterbacks, RJ. RJ White here from CBSSports.com. You have Kyler Murray going number one overall. Most people have Kyler Murray going number one overall to the Arizona Cardinals. And on top of that, you have a trade-up after that for the next quarterback off the board in your latest mock, at least at CBSSports.com, and that is Dwayne Haskins. You have the Redskins going up to number three to take him. Where are we looking at with these quarterbacks? What is the range of possibilities? Just kind of speak in general terms about Murray, Haskins, and by the way, you have Murray one overall to the Raiders. I'm sorry, not to the Cardinals. I'm just noticing that, which is interesting. But talk about, if you could, the range of possibilities with all these guys, and even including a Daniel Jones and a Drew Lock.
Yeah, I'm not sure the Cardinals are 100% sold on Murray. When it seemed like there was a full court press that went on at the combine, everybody's sources said that Murray was definitely going to be the pick, and they knew that number one, you know, 100% coming out. But, you know, it's really seemed to me you do that when you're trying to get that information out there to build up the trade value of the number one pick. Try to get a team that loves him, like Oakland might, to jump up and give you, you know, the moon for him, because you see these teams that already have a quarterback in place, like to trade out of that number one spot, they can get a ton of draft capital. We saw that with Tennessee trading down, letting the Rams come up and get Jared Goff. I think they got 2 ones, 2 twos, and 2 threes in that trade. So I'm not sure Arizona 100% sold on Murray. You know, you're starting to get little inklings of that coming through. I think Daniel Jeremiah said that he moved his projection down from 90% sure to 60% sure. Our Pete Prisco at CBS has been adamant that they're not locked in on that, and he really thinks they're going defense. So I think even if he does slip, he's not going to get further than three with the Jets trading down for someone to move up and get him, because I do think Oakland is the sweet spot for him. I think that they would love to grab a guy like that. Haskins, there's been a lot of buzz that he's going to go a little bit lower than people think. You know, he might not even be the second quarterback off the board, just because that came out in the 2 weeks leading up to the draft. This is really like primetime smokescreen season. That really stinks to me of a team like a Washington or a Miami that might want on him, trying to like put that buzz out there that teams aren't sold on him and he could go lower than people think. So I'm not spying into that too much. I really do think he's a good fit for the Giants. I'm probably thinking that he might be the pick there if he gets there, or a team could trade up to three or five to get him. I had Washington trading up because they're just so going to be so desperate for a young franchise quarterback after that freak Alex Smith injury, and I think they would trade their future first rounder and number 15 to move up as high as they need to and get that quarterback. So those are the top two, I think, in my mind. The other two, I think Locke could come off the board 8, 9, or 10, you know, with the 8 or 9 teams, the Bills being included in that, trading down to a team like Washington who trades up to get him if they miss out on the other trade up. So I do think that that's kind of the sweet spot, because John Elway is supposed to be infatuated with Locke, you know, and it makes sense. He's the perfect type of Elway quarterback that he looks for. And while it hasn't, you know, struck gold yet, all it needs to do is hit once, and then all of a sudden Elway looks like a genius. So I think if he's there at 10, he's the pick. So I would say Locke is going to be a top 10 pick one way or the other, whether with a team trading up or Denver taking him at 10. I think Cincinnati's a sleeper team for a quarterback at 11. They have a new coach. He's an offensive-minded coach. Andy Dalton's contract, you can get out of that right now for no cap hit. So it's possible that they look to the future at quarterback right now. They're in a good spot to do it if they do like a guy like Haskins or Locke. It wouldn't take too much of a trade-up from there to get one of those guys. Daniel Jones is a second-round pick to me, but then you just look at the value of the draft position. I don't think that he's going to go in the second round. I think it's too valuable to get that fifth-round option locked in for quarterbacks that some team is going to take him. If Washington isn't able to trade up before that, I think Daniel Jones could go 15 to them. If they aren't able to, you know, if they do get their quarterback situation settled and the Giants didn't take one at 6, it's possible he goes at 17. Although if you're the Giants and you don't settle your quarterback at 6, I don't see you going back and getting one at 17. I think if you consider quarterback a need, it's so important that you got to take it with your first pick. So I would imagine they get their quarterback at 6, even if it is Daniel Jones, they just do that at 6. You know, that doesn't make the most sense to me. And if he slips past 17, I think then you're looking at teams trading up from the second round into that late first round to get him. You know, we know Seattle's going to want to trade down from 21. That's what they do. There's several other teams that might be looking to trade down as well. So I could see a team like that misses out on a quarterback earlier, like a Cincinnati, maybe even Oakland, Denver, those type of teams moving up to get a pick in the 25 to 32 range and taking Jones at that point.
RJ White, CBS Sports. You can find him on Twitter, RJWhite1. That's where you can find his mock draft and all the stuff that he writes at CBSSports.com. As long as we're on quarterbacks, RJ, where do you fall on Tyree Jackson from right here in Buffalo?
I like him. I think he's got a lot of good traits. It hasn't all come together, so it's really kind of a wild card. But, you know, if it hits, you really could see a dominant type of player, because he can give you that rushing ability. He's a big guy. He's going to be hard to take down. And if he improves on his accuracy, which, you know, if every quarterback improves on their accuracy, they'd all be first-round picks. But so that's definitely an issue with him. But, you know, I do think it's out there. I would use a third-round pick on him, fourth-round pick on him, if I was a team that wasn't completely settled with my starter, or even if I had a veteran starter and I might be looking to develop a guy that comes through in a few years. Like Washington, they drafted RG3, number 2 overall. They came back in, got Cousins also, and then Cousins ends up being their guy for several years. So I think you can try to find a guy there to develop in the third, fourth round. And that's the type of guy that a quarterback whisperer type offensive coordinator can mold and try to scheme up and do some good things with, I think.
Where do you fall on the tight ends and how high they should go or could go? I am noticing in your draft you do not have one of the tight ends taken in the top 9 or 10 picks, where obviously some people have a TJ Hockenson up there or even a Noah Fant.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I think Detroit's in play for a tight end at 8. They signed Jesse James. He's more of a blocker. I don't think he's the number one tight end you want to put out there. And you just look at the other needs that Detroit has. I'm not sure they match up that well. You know, they got their edge rusher in Trey Flowers. They've brought in some other help. So if Devin White doesn't sink to them at 8, I think they would like to add an impact linebacker like that. I think tight end could be in play for them. In my mock, I had them trading back to 14 before taking TJ Hockenson. I think that late buzz is coming around that Hockenson might not be the first tight end off the board. It could be Noah Fant. Noah Fant's a much more dynamic receiver. He's not a more complete tight end, but if you're looking for receiving help at the tight end position, he's probably a guy you'd want slightly more than Hockenson. So I could see Detroit targeting him at 8. You know, Hockenson, I think, could be in play for Jacksonville at 7 if they don't like Taylor for whatever reason. Buffalo, I could even see liking a tight end. You know, I know they've brought in a few guys, but they could definitely need some more help. And I don't think either of these guys get past, you know, around the 20-21 range. I think that's probably the sweet spot for them. You know, Tennessee could use a tight end at 19. I think Minnesota might be a sleeper for one as well. So I think if you're a team like New England, we know they lost their potentially future Hall of Fame tight end this offseason, you're probably looking to trade up from 32 because you're not going to get one of these top two guys. And if you don't trade up, you probably got to sit back and probably take Irv Smith out of Alabama, who, again, is another good receiver. He's probably like Hockenson Light. He can block, he can catch, but he's not quite as good as his other guys, and his athletic testing wasn't anywhere near the level of a Noah Fant.
I'm looking at six different mock drafts at the CBSSports.com page I've opened. Yours is one of them. Five people, including you, have DK Metcalf going 22 to the Ravens. And I think, I haven't looked at everybody, I think he's the first wide receiver off the board, at least for you and most of the people on here. So is this wide receiver group just not worth taking that high? Because remember, after the combine, a lot of people had Metcalf going in the top 10, even including 9 to the Bills. But I notice you don't have the first one off the board, and that is Metcalf, and that is 22.
Yeah, one of my final mocks, I'm doubt he might not be my first receiver out. I think now that the medicals have checked that wall on Marquise Brown, he might be the number one guy that goes off the board in that 19 to 22 range. I'm not sure Metcalf is a locked-in first rounder. I know that he had that great workout, and he looked great in shorts and running the 40, but he's just not a complete receiver. He doesn't run a lot of different routes. He runs that deep speed route, and I know Buffalo has liked him. They did their work on him, but they bring in John Brown. It kind of seems like they're different sized individuals, obviously, but they do a lot of the same things. That straight line runner that gives you that deep ball. You know, I would rather go with more dynamic receivers if I were them. I think there is a possibility he slips out of the first round. He's not a lock to go as the top receiver in my mind. And it's not that bad of a receiver class. You know, we don't have any receivers in the top 20. There's no standout potential. There's no Odell Beckhams, AJ Greens, that type of thing. But there's a lot of great players in that 25 to probably even 75 range. You know, I think between 25 and the end of the second round, we might even see 10 receivers go off the board. And then there's such talent at the position that as you're looking to fill other needs, that's going to push some of these guys that are second-round talents down to the third round, maybe even the fourth round. It's a guy I like out of Notre Dame, Miles Boykin. I think he's a complete player. That would be the type of guy I'd be looking to get if I were the Bills, you know, late on day two, maybe early on day three. He tested through the roof, you know, 99th percentile, 6'4", 220. He's one of those bigger receivers, but he's more dynamic than Kelvin Benjamin. I think Kelvin Benjamin ran like a 4'6", 40. Miles Boykin was at a 4'4", 2. So if you develop him with the right coaching staff around him, I think he could be a number one receiver type in this draft. And because there's so much buzz around all these other guys like Paris Campbell, Debo Samuel, AJ Brown, all those kind of types of guys, that's a guy that gets kind of lost in there. He's going to end up going in round three, maybe even round four, that could emerge as a starter down the line.
All right, last thing I want to ask you about is running backs. Not early on, because for the Bills' purposes, they're not going to draft a running back early, but they do need to add some youth to that running back stable. We know they have LeSean McCoy and Frank Gore, the two oldest running backs under contract in the NFL right now, but they need to add a little bit. So give me something later, someone that might fit, somebody that could come in and contribute a little bit, but you know what? You're going to get a nice player here for the next 3-4 years that you can count on, maybe in all aspects of the game.
Yeah, I like Devin Singletary at FAU. You know, he could play on all three downs. You know, he didn't catch the ball that much in 2018, but I do think he can be a receiver. So he's going to be able to give you the running inside and be able to swing out and get some passing ability in that too. And he's able to protect the passer. You know, if you need him to pick up a blitz, he's able to do that well. I don't think he did that well at the combine, but I do think he's like a day three, you know, maybe even late round three. But, you know, it's kind of a mix of who you would put as the number 2, 3, 4 running backs in this draft. So some of these guys are going to slip into round 4, round 5, and I think if you can get a guy like Singletary there, I think that could be a guy that could emerge, you know, as a potential 3-down weapon, but at worst, he's going to be part of a committee down the line.
All right, RJ, thank you very much for this. I really appreciate it. Go follow him on Twitter, at RJWhite1. Also, CBSSports.com. You can find his mock draft and everything else he's writing about with the NFL draft. Enjoy your Easter and enjoy next week, man. The draft is finally here.
All right, thanks. Take care.
All right, thank you. That is RJ White from CBSSports.com. All right, what do you think about that? Most people have the Bills, Ed Oliver, in the mix there. I do as well. He's got them trading. And, you know, possibility that they could do that. I think, right? Did I see that right? Did he have him trade? I have to go back now and look what he had again. Now I'm forgetting his mock compared to all the other ones I had open here. We had six mocks here. I'm sorry, he didn't have him trade. He had Ed Oliver getting traded 4 right before the Bills at 8, and then Montez Sweat going at number 9. But we'll see. He'll have a full mock of final one coming up, I think, also before the draft. All right, let's get back to our schedule talk, shall we? Let's do this again one more time, if you can, Derek. We'll go back to the schedule. We talked about several of the teams the Bills are going to play, and now we got to the bye week, and we'll go after the bye week because the next team on the schedule is
the Miami
Dolphins, right? Yes, and what can you say about a team that some people say are tanking? I wouldn't put it that way. They're not trying to lose necessarily. They're not trying to lose. Tanking is trying to lose. But I think they are okay with knowing they're probably going to lose because of all the roster moves they made, stripping it down. Ryan Fitzpatrick, the quarterback, this should be two wins for the Bills this year. That should be. And if not, then, you know, that's a disappointment. This is a Miami Dolphins team that will be picking near the top or maybe at the top of the NFL draft next year.
I wouldn't consider the Dolphins tanking more so than they're okay with punting more than usual.
There you go.
All right, after the Dolphins, it's one of three straight home games, by the way.
Yes.
It's then a pair of NFC East foes, including, starting with, the Eagles.
Well, look, I mean, Carson Wentz should be healthy and playing. They are loaded with talent. We know that. This is a tough game for the Buffalo Bills. The Eagles, they'll look at this game and their schedule and say, we need to go to Buffalo and win. And they probably should feel that way. They will be favored in this game, most likely. We'll see what happens by the time they get here. But this is still a team that's loaded with talent, a team that could very well represent the NFC in the Super Bowl next year. This is a good game, a tough game. October 27th, right around Halloween. The last time the Eagles came to Buffalo was also on Halloween. It was like 70 degrees. So let's hope that's the case. But this is a good Eagles team, and they're going to be back in the mix, not only in the NFC East, but maybe for the entire conference.
And then another NFC East foe, the Washington Redskins, come to town.
You know, Washington's just not quite where they probably should be by this point in time under Jay Gruden's reign. They've had quarterback issues. They still have one with Alex Smith getting hurt. They traded for Case Keenum. We'll see what they do now here in the draft. This is a game that, you know, Washington's a perpetual 8-8 team, it seems like, right? They do some nice things. They look really good at times, and then, oh my God, I can't believe they lost that game other times. I was a team towards the middle of the season last year I really liked, and then they tailed off, and they didn't do everything I thought they would towards the end of the year. So a game that the Bills will have an opportunity to win, but this is a team that's right around 500, I think, and should be kind of competing and winning some games, maybe even some they shouldn't win, and losing some games maybe they should not lose either.
All right. Well, now we've got ourselves a team that, well, is a basement dweller but could be promising in Cleveland.
At the Cleveland Browns this year, a team loaded with talent. Everybody loves them. They're the darlings. They're getting all these primetime games. We know that. But here's the thing about the Cleveland Browns. Yeah, I think they're going to be good. They're super talented. What happens if things don't go great for them to start the year? What's going to happen with all those egos, with Baker Mayfield, with Odell, with Jarvis Landry? Because here's the thing. They have a first-year head coach, and not only a first-year head coach, but one of them was just a position coach, rose right to coordinator, then went right to head coach. Look at their early season schedule. It's tough. Tennessee, then the Jets, then the Rams, then the Ravens, the Niners, the Seahawks, the Patriots. You know, they don't have to get off to a great start. And if they don't, by the time they play the Bills, you wonder what they're doing in Cleveland. Then again, they have tremendous talent, and they do deserve all the love they're getting and the publicity they're getting for the moves they made here in the offseason. The Bills play at Cleveland on November 10th.
All right, Sal, we've got four more. Are we rolling through, or are we going to...
Let's do one more, and then we'll get to a break.
All right, then. One more. The Denver Broncos. We go right before Thanksgiving.
I don't like what Denver's doing. They traded for Joe Flacco. They're going to have to come east here to play the Bills in November, and not a big deal for them. They play in cold weather themselves a lot of times up there in Colorado. But, you know, we'll see where Flacco is at that time. We'll see what they're doing in the draft. If they do draft a Drew Lock or somebody else, this is a lot of pressure this year on John Elway. He needs to start winning. But, again, I think this is like a 500 type of team, the Denver Broncos. I don't see them contending for the West. Two teams that are better than them for sure in the Chiefs and Chargers in their own division. So by the time you get to Week 12, we'll see what the Denver Broncos are. But I don't think that they're on the right track, and I think that John Elway could very well be on the hot seat as this season goes on, because Joe Flacco should not be the answer for them. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We have, three more teams to get to here for the Bills on their schedule. But in the meantime, my man Greg Brady from The Fan in Toronto is going to join me. We'll talk Leafs-Bruins series and even squeeze some Raptors and NBA in there after this timeout on WGR.
We had really good luck tonight. We forechecked well. I thought we broke out probably our best game of the series as far as breaking the puck out cleanly and just communicating, coming out of our zone. So, it's nice to just be rewarded, I guess. I thought we stuck with it. I thought both teams played pretty well defensively. There really wasn't much going on the first couple periods. It was just kind of back and forth with not much substance. So, nice to break through. And then obviously another big goal by Cappy there a couple minutes later.
So that is Austin Matthews. Did you, Derek, did you see the goal that was allowed that was the controversial goal? The first goal by the Maple Leafs?
You know, here's the thing with the rules in playoff hockey that I don't really seem to understand. If you're just going to throw them out, why have rules?
Right. So what happened? Just tell me what happened. I didn't see it. Okay, there we go. All right, yeah, no problem. I think we're getting our guest there. Hey, see, behind-the-scenes sort of stuff there. I didn't see it. I turned it on, and I'm like, what happened here? Everybody's talking about this goal, not goal on Twitter, should be a goal, shouldn't be a goal, all that kind of stuff. But it didn't necessarily – it was ruled a goal, but we had a lot of people saying it shouldn't have been a goal. I didn't see it. Greg Brady did. He's up in Toronto from The Fan, and Greg joins me right now on the Western Hotline. Greg Brady, The Fan 590 in Toronto. What happened on that first goal? I didn't see it. What was the deal there?
Well, Tuukka Rask hasn't seen it, so you're not you're not alone. Yeah, it's one of those plays. I thought there was contact. I thought Hyman got Zach Hyman in front of the net got pushed into Tuukka Rask, but I also thought Hyman, as you know, Sal, the guys can sell it a little bit and be like, yep. Oh, I can't control my balance now. I'm falling. I don't know where I'm going to land. And I thought there was a definite method to the madness of interfering with Tuukka Rask. I think if they weigh that off right away, Sal, it's real hard. And I'm not saying just because you got 18,000 people at TD Garden who are going to go crazy and the Bruins bench, no less. But I think if they wave it off right away, they'd have to stick with that call. The fact they didn't also meant it was probably likely to stick with that call. Like, it's really borderline. But it certainly was it's a massive, massive goal for the Leafs, and they've got an opportunity now to do something they haven't done in 15 years, and that's win a first-round series tomorrow afternoon.
By the way, Greg Brady joining us here on WGR. You can find him on Twitter, at GregBradyTO. He is up on The Fan 590 in Toronto. Happy Easter to you, man. Thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
Oh, listen, I'll tell you what. I have an uncle. My sister lives in Rochester. She works at the University of Rochester coaching field hockey. And she and her husband are in the Dominican Republic. I've got their two sons. I've got my two sons. My wife's in Orlando covering the Raptors. I've never been so happy to talk to somebody else in my life, Sal. I'm not exaggerating on this one.
Covering? What does your wife do?
She's a writer for the Globe and Mail. She's a sports writer for the Globe and Mail. So she leaves to cover Raptors Magic. And
wow.
She'll be back Monday with the potential, obviously, to go back to Orlando because that series is now 2-1 and Game 6 would be in Orlando Thursday night. So, bit of a sports broadcasting journalism family, but I got four boys here between 10 and 13, and they're messy, Sal. Like, I'm trying to remember what it was like when I lived with six guys at university, and it's double that trouble when our parents would come in and go, what are we paying you to go to university for? This is a pigsty. That's what it's like at my house right now.
Now, let me ask you this, because I'm always interested in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a beat reporter for football, so I only travel 10 weekends a year, counting preseason. What's it like on your wife to the beat reporting, the traveling, whenever she does? Like, the NBA season, that's 40-something road games.
Yeah, she's not on the road terribly often. She's covered some of the bigger – like, go play Kawhi Leonard's return in San Antonio and
yep.
The playoffs and whatnot. But I did – you know, I did the Detroit Lions when I worked there for 3 years. I did the end right before the Matt Millen era started. And then the first year or two of Matt Millen, and you're right, it's not so bad. You hunker down, you know you got four and a half months of good travel, preseason games, 10, 11 weekends total, and you can get through it. And let's face it, we're not complaining, right? You stay in nice places.
That's right.
There's not a lot of travel during the week, so you pretty much got your Monday afternoons through Friday evenings. But it's Orlando's not so bad, though. They were either going to go to Detroit or Brooklyn or Orlando in this round. And as you know, it hasn't stopped raining in our area here for the last 60 hours or so. Also fun when you've got four boys, 10 to 13. They're driving you crazy. But yeah, Orlando was probably the best of those destinations for given we're having a terrible April weather-wise.
I do want to talk about the Raptors in a minute, but let's stay on Maple Leafs Bruins. I haven't watched every minute of the series. I know you've watched a lot more than me, obviously, but what I have watched, I think it's been a pretty even series. What's been the difference?
Yeah, I said that on our show Friday morning. 2-2 is really fair after four games. Sometimes it's not. For some teams, I think Washington is a little hard done by being not up 3-1 in their particular series. I think you can make the case that Nashville could be up 3-1 in their series. The other night, and could be a 3-2. They might have even been the better team in 4-5 games. Just some short lapses. But you're right. Leafs Bruins has been exceptionally even. I'll tell you also the difference between this year and last year, when the Leafs got down two games to none, came back. Nazem Kadri got suspended 3 games in that series, and they lost 2 of the 3. They've obviously won 2 of the 3 games they played without Kadri so far. I thought they'd have a tougher time last night, with Boston getting the last change and the matchups. But the Leafs are a deeper team than last year. Adding John Tavares in the offseason is just a multi-level, multi-layered game changer. And they've had the and they've been able to utilize William Nylander, the younger player, Alex's brother, obviously, at the center instead of wing on the third line. And it's been passable. It's been good. So, and the goaltending, much, much better than last year. Both goalies, I don't know that either goalie has stolen a game, but both goalies got pulled. Anderson got pulled twice in games last year, over seven games, and he didn't get pulled in the game seven, but he was abysmal in the game seven and finished the series with a save percentage a few marks under 900, which you just can't have in the playoffs. So I'm going to feel a little bad so far for either goalie to lose this series. I'm going to feel a bit bad because other than maybe a few moments here and there, I think it's been the best goaltending series in the entire playoffs. Neither guy's been pulled so far, and I think that's the only series that's been like that.
Now, let's just pretend for a second. I'm only asking you this because people ask us. I'm not trying to stir the pot here at all, but let's just pretend that the Bruins come back and win this series. Would there be any chance at all that Mike Babcock would be in any sort of danger or jeopardy?
I think only if he wants to be in danger. And what I mean by that is if you told me he's coming to the end, everyone remembers the drama with the Sabres and the Leafs and the Red Wings in the spring of 2015. So he's coming to the end of his fourth year, and the first year was for the better part, a tank season. Like when Buffalo got Reinhardt and Buffalo got Eichel, it was a lot like that. It was strip down the assets, move some bets at the deadline, and understand what it is. Now, they only had to do 1 year of that before they got Auston Matthews, and they've been in the playoffs the last 3 years. But it'd be three straight playoff losses. It'd be three straight losses with the same goalie and the same head coach. And I don't know how many times teams do that. Move into a fourth year. I'm not blaming the goalie. The goalie had a lot on the shoulders last year, but unless something goes really south with Frederick Anderson's game in the next two games, tomorrow afternoon and Tuesday night, he's not the problem this year. That's for sure. So, if you would ask me if Mike Babcock was in a 6-year deal and only had 2 years left on it, I could see there being an issue. Four, it's a lot to pay out, even for a company as like, this is a little bit like, you know, this is a little bit of Pegula ball here. Like, they don't mind paying people to go away, but 4 years for Mike Babcock at around $5-6 million a year, that's an awful lot. That's an awful big check to stroke a head coach, knowing he's just going to land somewhere else next season. So I think he's fine. I only think if Babcock was frustrated by tension within the organization, which there has been rumors up between him and a much younger GM and Kyle Dubas, if Babcock said, you know what, this is a marriage that isn't working for me. Maybe it's not what I thought it was, but I think that's real, real unlikely, even if they do lose the series. I think there's an 85-90% chance he's back.
Talking with Greg Brady, the Fan, 590 Toronto. All right, what about the other coach in your city coaching hockey, Sheldon Keefe? His name is really starting to pop up a lot now as far as the Sabres' possible interest in what he could do. What could you tell us about him?
Yeah, I mean, there's another – Kyle Dubas brought him and grouped him with the Sioux Greyhounds in junior hockey for quite a few years, and his record in the OHL. There's been a lot of OHL coaches jump to the NHL. Pete DeBoer was a very good Ontario Hockey League coach. Full disclosure, I did play-by-play for 7 years in the league, so he was there at the time. Pete DeBoer was with the Kitchener Rangers. Craig Hartsburg was an OHL coach. I don't know that the guys think they have to necessarily make that jump to the AHL anymore. But with Keith, this was an obvious thing to do, is coach the Leafs farm team. There's been a lot of talk, like when they had Dallas Aikens here, who I expect to get the Anaheim job. He's been in San Diego with Anaheim's AHL affiliate, and that just seems to be a fait accompli that at some point they'll name him. He'll get back after a disastrous run in Edmonton, but how many head coaches are having good runs with the Edmonton Oilers over the last 15 years? Not too many. So, no, Keith's really bright. He's definitely heavily into the analytics, like not mildly into the analytics of the sport, heavily into the analytics. So he was more a rough and tumble junior hockey player, played 120 NHL games. So it wouldn't surprise me if that's the guy Buffalo is isolated right now, regardless of how long the Marlies playoff run goes. And so I think when people call up your show or show up in the Bulldog and they say, why are the Sabres taking so long? Well, they may have something already set with Sheldon Keefe.
Right.
I don't know that for sure, but it wouldn't shock me. Look at yesterday with the timing. Steve Yzerman, you probably saw, new general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, and they're laying out this timeline. Oh, yeah, it just occurred to us in the last couple months that Steve Yzerman retired from the Lightning, and maybe we should come on. I mean, you can say that, but as we know with athletes and organizations, the timing never quite gets laid out to the public. I watched that with Jason Botterill talking about letting Phil Housley go. I mean, it's never quite what they say it is because they can't tell you everything. So wouldn't shock me already if Buffalo, you know, passing on a Landinho, not really getting close to Todd McClellan. Maybe they know that the Sheldon Keefe is the player they want, the coach they want.
I think it's either Keefe or Taylor, Chris Taylor, the Rochester Americans coach. I do think right now it appears to me like it's going to be one of those guys.
Yeah, just make it who wins the series, right?
That's right. Right. They
make that proclamation. It makes the series a lot more interesting. Tomorrow he's an American.
Not only is your series on the line, but whichever one wins, you go to the NHL and you get a job. All right, before I let you go.
Yeah, you get Shave Ball to the center, in the center ice circle. We're gonna go Adrian Adonis on you right at the end of the series.
Adonis reference. That's nice. All right, Toronto Raptors, NBA, second most wins in the NBA this year. How far can they go in these playoffs? They're up 2-1 right now on Orlando.
They're one of a few teams that has to be, I'll tell you, they have to be a little bit excited by what looks like a little bit of strife, a little bit of, you know, how would I put it, problems with the impenetrable armor of the Golden State Warriors. I thought when the Clippers came back on Golden State this week in Game 2, I know they lost Game 3 handily. I'm not saying the Clippers are going to mess with Golden State here, but it was the first home game Golden State's lost in the first round since 2014 when Mark Jackson was coaching. It's never happened in the Steve Kerr era. So all the way, does all the way mean to the NBA Finals and then succumbing to likely the Golden State Warriors? They've got as good a chance as anybody. The team I like out of the East, it's still there. It's the Boston Celtics. I would have picked the Celtics at the start of the year. And they didn't pop in the regular season quite like I expected. I don't think Jason Tatum took a huge leap in his second year after a great playoff and a great regular season. They got Gordon Hayward back healthy. I don't know what happened in Boston all year, but they look good now. And Kyrie Irving looks like the best player in the Eastern Conference again, like he was a couple of those years that Cleveland went to the finals. The one year that he was healthy, they won over Golden State. The one year he wasn't healthy in 2015, they didn't win. So, you know, LeBron aside, LeBron moving to the West opened up this whole new universe for, I think, Raptors fans, I think Milwaukee Bucks fans. And to me, Sal, the Bucks are the new Raptors. I think people look at Milwaukee right and go, nice regular season. You got to prove something in the playoffs. And they've got just a walkover with the Pistons in the first round. Milwaukee gets Boston next round. I think Toronto's not going to have a problem with Philadelphia or Brooklyn, Sal. But that Milwaukee-Boston series, if I'm the Raptors, I'm wanting to play the Bucks. Boston's just got too much experience. I love their coach, that atmosphere. We got a Toronto-Boston hockey rivalry happening right now. We could really have a great Raptors-Celtics conference final.
All right, buddy. Well, listen, thanks for doing this. Enjoy Vlad Guerrero soon. He's coming your way, I'm quite sure.
By the way, I don't even know, did they get that game in last night at the Bison game or no?
Rained out last night, and I don't even think they're going to get anything in today. They have, like, a doubleheader scheduled.
Yeah, and he's probably playing here Tuesday. That's the problem of being an affiliate sometimes. You don't get to keep those players very long. At least you saw him a chunk last year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Greg, hey, happy Easter to you. Thanks for doing this today. All the best. Appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime. Ask you anytime. Thanks so much.
All right, that is Greg Brady. He is on 590 The Fan up in Toronto. We'll take one final timeout. We'll come back here, and I'll run through those last three teams on the Bills' schedule and what I exactly think about each one of them before we head on out from Buffalo Sports here live on WGR. All right, we don't have much time left. We're going to go right out to the phone line. Sean from Dallas has chimed in. Sean, you got to be excited about Thanksgiving coming your way, man.
Hey, I know, man. I'm excited. And I got my family who are Cowboys fans. We're probably going to go to the game together. So I'm excited for it, looking forward to it. Hey, here's what I wanted to bring up, Sal. And
yep.
In your perspective, I really think Kyler Murray's not going number one.
Okay.
To me, it's too many red flags for a number one guy. His size, you know, they always talk about his best offensive line in football. He's a one-year wonder kind of guy. He really just performed last year and all of his passes were wide open receivers. And, you know, I've listened to experts talk about closed window throws were really, really difficult for him. So, I mean, that's just a thought. I wanted to see how that would change the draft in your opinion. And then how far would he fall? And then my next point is TJ Hawkinson. That's my guy, man. You know, just think of the cross guy, Hawkinson, the wide receivers we got. I really think that would be a piece. You talk about building with Josh Allen and wanting to make, you know, Josh Allen better. We've got a good defense. Now, sure, we could replace parts, and there's no doubt about it. You always got to keep doing that. But, you know, someone mentioned Patrick Mahomes and his offense. You know, they didn't really have a great defense. it is what it is, right? This is an offensive league, and we got to give him weapons. And I think this would be a really good weapon for him. I just wanted to throw that out there, get your take on it, and, man, have a great Easter weekend, and I look forward to listening to your critique offline, okay?
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. It just so happens, Sean. It just so happens. I just did a mock draft where I said, hey, I think Kyler Murray's going number one, but what if he doesn't? What if he doesn't? And I did the exercise. So you can go and read that at WGR550.com. But I had the Cardinals then taking Nick Bosa at number one if that happens, and it's not Kyler Murray. But to answer your question, how far could he drop? It would probably be only to about six where the Giants are, or someone trading up into that area there, whether it's the Giants or the Redskins or the Raiders or the Dolphins or the Bengals or the Broncos, a team that might want, you know, to, oh, wow, here comes Kyler Murray. We can go get him. I think that's where he would go. He would still go top 10 to me. As far as the tight end, Hockenson, look, I'm fine with T.J. Hockenson on the Bills. I love the idea of having that tight end. Even Noah Fant, I'm fine with taking a guy, putting him in this offense. They need to add to it. I do think there's a discussion about position value, though, in the NFL draft and whether or not a tight end at number nine is too high, considering most tight ends who've really become something in this league were not even taken in the first round. You can find them all over. There's lots of really good tight ends. And it's not that Hockenson's not better. He is. He's the best tight end in the draft. That's not the point. The point is, could you get a great edge rusher or interior defensive lineman and still get a really good tight end who's not quite Hockenson in the second round? That's what I wrestle with when I talk about it. I don't mind Hockenson at nine if they wind up doing it, though. All right, so I hope that answered the question. By the way, love your analysis of what you said about Murray, and I know you watch a lot of Big 12 football out there in Dallas. Enjoy Thanksgiving when it comes your way. Even with your Cowboy family, friends, just don't go fight each other. It is Thanksgiving, and it's supposed to be family time to love each other. All right, let's go through the last three teams on the Bills' schedule we have not touched on this year. Take it away, Derek.
Well, speaking of Sean from Dallas, the next team we have to talk about is Dallas.
Yeah, the Dallas Cowboys. Look, I mean, we know that this is a team that always has enough talent to make the playoffs. They did last year. They won a playoff game even last year. So, you know, they've been disappointed largely in Jason Garrett's tenure, but they have very talented players. Dak Prescott is not an elite quarterback. He's not in the upper echelon, but he's good enough, and he's surrounded enough with good enough weapons that, you know, he can take them places. And obviously we all love Zeke Elliott as a running back. This is going to be a tough game for the Buffalo Bills, but that Dallas is also 4-4 in Jason Garrett's tenure on Thanksgiving Day games. This is a team that sometimes just doesn't play up to either its potential or doesn't have as much potential or talent as people like to let you think they do, because they are the Dallas Cowboys. This is a pretty good football team. It's going to be a tough test for the Buffalo Bills, but it's not an overwhelming one, and it's not one that we should completely discount.
All right. And then we end it with a couple of AFC North teams, the Baltimore Ravens.
I don't like Baltimore right now. Usually I'm a guy that tells you a lot about – I'm very high on Baltimore normally. Almost every year I say, boy, the Ravens. I love John Harbaugh. I love what they built there with Ozzie Newsome at GM. They've done a great job of drafting over the years, retaining players, building and developing players. But I don't like where they are right now. I don't like Lamar Jackson as the quarterback to go be their franchise guy, and how they're trying to build a kind of a run-first offense with him as one of the centerpieces of that and then throw the ball once in a while. I just don't feel like it's the same Baltimore team. They lost C.J. Mosley on defense. They lost other players on defense as well. Eric Weddle's gone. We know that. So, yeah, these are – Terrell Suggs is gone. So this is a very changing type of team, and I think might be in a transition year, the Baltimore Ravens. I think the Bills are getting them in a nice season here when they have to play Baltimore, especially at home in Buffalo.
And then finally, we end it with the Pittsburgh Steelers, because we don't want to repeat teams.
No, we don't. And, you know, Pittsburgh, did you see what happened the other day? They showed up for their first round of voluntary workouts that pretty much had like 100% attendance or something like that. And Ben Roethlisberger said, we're all about each other. And that's a straight shot at, you know, Antonio Brown and even Le'Veon Bell for, you know, what happened last year. And I never discount the Pittsburgh Steelers with Ben Roethlisberger, with a lot of that talent, what it means, the culture they built there, knowing that, you know, you go into that building, you're expected to win. And that's what they've been about under, you know, Mike Tomlin. But they had a step back last year, and their window is starting to close. So, you know, by the end of the year, we'll see where they are. But it seems like Pittsburgh usually plays some of their best football as you roll into November and December. And that's when the Bills get them in Pittsburgh, December 15th. That will be a very, very tough matchup for the Buffalo Bills. I want to thank Paul Hamilton, Chris Mathias from Western New York Lacrosse, RJ White from CBS Sports, Greg Brady from the Fan 590 in Toronto. And, of course, thank you very much to Buffalo Sports here at 3840 McKinley Parkway. They'll be here the rest of the day. You can come in and get your skate sharpened for free. You can get a golf club re-gripped and installed for free as well. And also, of course, thank you to Derek Kramer for doing a great job back at the station. We got ESPN Radio coming up next. And then tonight at 7:30, it is Bandits Lacrosse taking on the New England Black Wolves from down in downtown Buffalo at the Key Bank Center. Have a great, great Easter, everyone. Stay safe out there.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.